it's kind of nice to speak to a group of people that I feel like that I'm speaking to peers, people that are experienced beekeepers, and whether or not you have a lot of years under your belt or not, there's a reason that you're here, and the reason is that you're wanting to elevate your position in keeping bees. You want to learn how to raise queens, or you know how to raise queens, you want to get better at it, or you're better at it, you're pretty good at it, but you want to hear what another queen producer does in their operation, because there's always something to learn from everybody. I'll learn something from you guys before the day's out, I'm sure. But don't ever think you know everything about it, because the bees will make you look really stupid. When you think you know it, they'll make you look dumb. It's humbling to be made to feel like you're stupid by a bug. You know, but I don't know how you guys raise bees. I'm sure some of you graft, some of you don't. I'm sure some of you use a non-grafted method of raising queens. Whatever works for you, use it. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that you got to do it this way or it's not going to make you a living. Because if what you're doing works to suit you, then that's good enough. But the subject I want to talk about, just as kind of a jumping off point, is selecting stock for breeding purposes. Now, there's a difference between raising queens and breeding queens. And if you've ever had a swarm, you've raised a queen. You may not have been aiming to, but you've raised a queen. And that's just how easy it is to raise a queen. You dequeen a hive, and if there's eggs and bees and food in that hive, they're going to make the queen. Whether or not that queen gets back from her mating flight, that's a whole different equation there. But breeding queens is a different subject altogether. Breeding queens implies that you're trying to skew the odds by whatever method to get the product that you want. The product that you want may differ pretty widely between beekeepers. If all you do is pollinate watermelons and pumpkins, you don't need a big hive until mid-May, maybe late May. So it doesn't matter if you have Carniolas or Russians. That's fine, because they may not be big enough to pollinate squash and cucumbers, or to pollinate cherries, or something that blooms early in the season. But they're plenty big pollinate vine crops. Squash is a vine crop too, technically. But they're usually earlier than watermelons and pumpkins. On the other hand, I don't know how the honey flow is here, but at home, if you're going to make a good honey crop, you better have a booming hive of bees by the second week of April. And if you don't, you're going to miss a good part of the honey flow, because the majority of our honey flow is around tax day. It starts around April 15 with black locust and tulip pop. If the year is good, we'll have some white clover throughout the summer. And this is one of those years. This is a year that you can just pretty much just throw everything out the window, because anything you do works. They're going to make a lot of honey. There's a good honey flow this year at home. But in an average year, you've got to have a big hive first of April, first couple of weeks of April, if you're going to get a good honey flow. That means you've got to have bees that start really quick. And generally speaking, Italians will start a little bit quicker.
I can't believe that you're telling what a big hive is.
A big hive is a deep body packed with bees. A big hive is six frames of capped brood. If you've got six frames of capped brood and the attendant bees to go with it, that means you're going to have four to six more frames of open brood. And if you have a hive that size, it's actually two deeps. But that, if you look into the bottom box and you can't see the bottom board looking down through it, bees are just packed in there in that bottom box, and there's brood and bees up in the top box too. That's a good enough height. But six frames of calf brood and a laying queen, and that hive's going to make a honey crop. Because for every frame of calf brood, and these are just kind of rules of thumb sort of thing, for every full frame, deep frame of calf brood, front and back, both sides, all cap, not anything much open. It's just like putting a 2-pound package of bees in the hive. Now that's, you know, if you can imagine, you know about how many bees are in a 2-pound package. And if you can imagine having six frames, six of those, that you're dumping in the hive within the next 11 days. If it's capped, 11 days later, it's going to be an adult bee. 11 days or sooner. That's just the biology of the honeybee. If it's a worker, once it's capped, it's got 11 days before to be an adult. So, when you're looking at these frames of calf brood, take that into account. It takes a big hive of bees to make a big honey crop. And if your honey flow is early, you need bees that are going to build up. You need bees that start early and build up quick. And that's what I select for. When I'm breeding bees, when I'm choosing a queen mother hive to graft from, I choose a hive that started the earliest and built up the quickest. And those two things are, they don't always go hand in hand. You may have a queen that starts really early, but just kind of drags along. And, you know, lays a little here and a little there, kind of sporadic. And usually, the bees that we have that have more Russian or Carniolan ancestry, that's kind of what I see. Yeah. They may start early, which is a little bit against the nature of Carniolans or Russians, but the longer that you raise your own bees in a particular area, the more acclimated they'll become to the forage and the climate in your area. If you consistently buy a Russian breeder from Canada, somewhere far north, from Vermont, that's how they're going to act. They're going to start late, pretty much every year. When they start, they're just going to blow up. But they're going to be late in starting. But if you raise your own bees in your own area, eventually they will acclimate to that area. Even Russian, even the races that start late, they will eventually acclimate to your area through the forage and through the climate. Or that they'll start about the same time. But Carniolans and Russians are really tuned to the forage. And if there's no pollen and nectar coming in, they're going to kind of start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. Or the more Italian the lineage is, they're going to have a bigger cluster coming out of the winter. So they'll have a little bit more base there to start with. And it's all about thermal regulation. The small clusters, even if a Russian queen laid a full frame of eggs, the cluster can't cover it. They're going to cannibalize all the eggs that they can't cover. And even if she's laying a big pattern, the next day it's going to look like a small pattern because the bees will clean all that up because they can't cover it. And the thing with Italian clusters, they're bigger. They can control the heat in the hive in a larger area. So you have a Russian cluster that's like this, an Italian cluster that's like that, coming in the first week of April. Well, the Italian cluster, the queen's going to lay all of that. The Russian cluster, she's going to lay all of this. It's just a simple math thing. And it becomes exponential because this sphere has, you know, it's not like you got a 6-inch sphere here versus a 12-inch. the 12 inch don't have twice the amount of eggs. It has about eight times the amount of eggs, at least. So, there is the reason that the Italian-based races, like the Minnesota Hygienic, or various hybrids that you raise that have more Italian lineage, that's why they start quicker in the spring, because of the thermal regulation. They're able to heat a larger area because they come through the winter with a larger cluster. Now, this last year, the problem that we had was that they came through a winter with a cluster this big, and that was good, except they were all dead. So, and what happens? You have a cluster this big, they're clustered there, and they're in a band of honey, and it's 30 degrees, and they don't get above 30 degrees that day, they're fine. But then they eventually eat all that honey, and it gets to 20 degrees, the cluster constricts to retain more heat, be more efficient with the heat in the hive. It gets outside of that band of honey, and if it don't get above 35 degrees for 2 days, which it didn't, they're likely to die. It takes about 48 hours for an entire cluster to starve to death. If the cluster cannot break or move as a cluster within the hive, it needs to be about 35 degrees ambient temperature for the cluster to be able to move. Now, the reason all of them didn't die is because some of them clustered in a bigger band of honey. There was more honey within the cluster. It don't get so cold that bees can't move inside that cluster, but the cluster itself can't move. That's how come a lot of them died this year. And when you find a hive that has a dead cluster and there's honey that far from them, and you think, man, these are stupid. They had honey an inch from them and they wouldn't go eat it. That's what happened. It was too cold for 2 days, 3 days in a row. They couldn't move the cluster to the food source, and they died. But even large clusters, that can happen, even to a big cluster, under the perfect circumstances. So don't beat yourself up over your bees dying, starving to death in the winter with honey in the hive. They just couldn't move. But when you're choosing races to breed from, I'm convinced that every person here can raise a better queen to breed from than what you're going to buy from a queen breeder producer. Because the bee that you're raising on your place, if you're raising a queen from your best colony, the one that, number one, lived through the winter, because it's hard to raise them from dead eyes, and number two, started early, built up quick. Those three things, if you choose that consistently, year after year, you're going to have a better queen than anything you're going to buy from me or from an actual queen breeder. Now, there is a reason to buy queens from a breeder. If you have a specific trait or quality that you're wanting to incorporate into your bees that your bees don't have, say that your bees don't handle varroa very well, and you're wanting to incorporate a variety of bees that has varroa-sensitive hygienic behavior, get a VSHB. Get one of those, get a breeder, and work that into your bees. Main thing is to keep notes and make sure that the target that you're shooting at, you're actually hitting it, or at least getting closer to it. But there are reasons to buy breeder queens, but I wouldn't recommend anyway, just throwing money at breeders just for the sake of having a breeder. Your queen is going to be just as good. The issue, more often than not, the issue between good queens and bad queens is how well they were mated. When you get queens in early April, you're nearly always going to get a poorly mated queen. Almost always. Even if you're getting them from the south, probably going to be a poorly mated queen. if you're getting queens right now that were raised right now, you're going to get a lot better quality queen than one you're getting early April. It won't be superseded nearly as high a percentage of the time. They will lay a lot more eggs, and they'll be good probably all season next season. Not just this year, but all season next season. Right now is the best time to raise a queen, between mid-May and mid-July, because they'll be better mated. Regardless of genetics, they're going to be better mated if you raise them. And it'll make you look like the best queen producer that has ever been, because you're going to pull a frame of brood out of your hive to show your beekeeper buddy, this is a queen that I raised, and this is going to just, it's going to look great, because she was well mated. And because it's the time of year that the bees are inclined to build up population really fast. So, whether it's Italian, Carniola, Russian, Caucasian, mutt, whatever, use your own bees as your breeders and incorporate other stock however often you want to. But when you incorporate stock, know what you're wanting to do with it before you get it. Don't just get a bee because this one's really pretty. This one's bright yellow, and I really like a bright yellow bee because I can find the queens better. That's what marketing is for. But put a mark on them, you'll find them better. But if you're going to get breeding stock, do it with a purpose. You want one that starts off quicker, an Italian stock would be better. If you want one that's really pretty, get a Cordova. They're really pretty. And they're really good for one season. They may or may not make it through the winter. But Cordovas are better now than they used to be. Hygienic behavior, you can test for hygienic behavior if you want to. Most of the bees that you're going to get nowadays will test hygienic. And by most, I mean a really high percentage. 85-90%, maybe even more. The reason for that is that they've been culled over the last 10 years or so just because the one that wasn't hygienic died. The breeding stock is gone. If it wasn't hygienic, it didn't survive, even with the queen breeder. When you're evaluating the queen, after you've raised the queen, don't give up on a queen because it has a spotty brood pattern. You pull a frame of brood out of a hive, and it's capped brood, and there's all kinds of empty cells in it. Look in those empty cells. The queen may have gone back over it and laid eggs in it. That's actually a sign of hygienic behavior. When you find a frame of capped brood that has a lot of misses all over it, we used to call it shotgun pattern. But if the misses are shotgun, then that's a sign of a hygienic hive. If the few cells that are capped, if they're like a shotgun pattern, if there's no other larva, if all the other cells on the frame are open, then that's usually a failing queen most of the time. But if there's just a bunch of empty cells on a frame of capped brood, that's a sign that there was something wrong on that frame with those pupa or with the larva, and your bees removed, which is what you want. I mean, I don't mind seeing a frame that I can tell at one time it was a solid frame of brood that has a third of it missing. Because whatever was wrong, the bees found, they found it, and they got it out of there. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I bought a whole line this year, and I was concerned because there was a lot of empty cells, and I got to look at it, and you could lay a solid pattern. You see it in my
back. Yep.
And I've also noticed that I've got rid of the medium last year, and I've noticed over this year, there's a lot more sealed brood in there than
there's
not
they're taking care of it. They've got whatever the problem was, they made it kind of corral it and get it out of the hive, evidently. And as more than likely, with you saying that, if that's what you're seeing, last year there was quite a bit of open spots on your cap frame, and this year there's not nearly as many. It's the same queen, same line of queens, probably varroa mites. Because as they remove those, they change the relation there. You know, the varroa mite population had been here and now is here. And they've changed that by removing all the pupa that had, or a lot of the pupa that was infested with varroa mites. That's probably what the issue was. And, the pole line, it's primarily an Italian. And, POL. Is POL line. The reason that's called that, it's almost like a slang term that some of the breeders came up with. And, before that line came about, you know, I know some of the people that actually started selling these, marketing these bees as whole line bees. And I asked one of them, I said, is this some breeder from Poland or what? You know, and he just laughed at me. He said, it's the same bees that you got white 20 years ago. And then, I started like everybody else with packaged bees. And some of them were good, some of them were awful, some of them were in between, but I never could get any consistency with them. And I started working for commercial beekeepers some in South Mississippi. And I was working for him, not for money, but for bees. And I would help him, and I would take a few newts and put them in my bee yard. I started raising queens from them. At that time, all the commercial beekeepers put everything that you had ever heard of to take care of whatever problem in their hives. I mean, there was, I don't know how much chemicals were put in the hives. None of it was on label. It was all off label. All of it was illegal. But you know, it kept the bees alive. And I didn't do any of that. I just raised more bees from the ones that survived. And, they were kind of, the two commercial guys that I was working for some were really intrigued about that. And they were saying, well, don't you have a lot of dyes? Yeah, I have a whole lot of them die, but I have some of them live too. And I breed from them. And I'm getting fewer and fewer losses every year. Well, after about 5 years, I was back to about the same amount of loss that I've had when I was treating. And that really intrigued them. And then there was a virus that was vectored into the hive by varroa mites, probably, that these guys got, and it wiped out their queen cell crop. And this was probably 10 years ago. And their queen cell is called black queen cell virus. And it just really whacked their queen cell crop for about 2 weeks. It finally played itself out in about 2 weeks. But in that 2 week time span, they got queen cells for me. So, I tease them a lot because they took great pleasure in teasing me. And I tease them a lot about the good thing I was here. Go, you guys be out of business. You know, then that wasn't true at all, but sounded good and fun to jab them about it. But anyway, this commercial guy that I was talking with, he said, do you remember when we had the black queen cell virus thing? I said, yep. He said, you got your bees from Dwight and you didn't treat them. And then you gave us all those queen cells that year that we had black queen cell virus. So we went back to that variety of bees that Dwight had that he gave you. Yeah? Basically, that's pretty much what it was. And he said, so we crossed them with some Marta Spivax Minnesota Hygienics, and we got this bee that does pretty good, and we needed some breeder bees, and we couldn't find anything any better than what we already had, so we just made our own breeder bees, and they're pole lines. So, where's the pole? I mean, none of us have the initials P-O-R-L, and he said, pollinate it, stupid. No. Okay. He said, we all go to almonds, and everybody in California understands the pole line is a pollinator line. That's what will build up quick enough to get into almonds in California in January and February. And he said, they build up quick. They start early. They build up quick. You can stimulate them into building fruit. And that's the key with the pole line. They're easily manipulated. And kind of like Italians. Italians are easily manipulated. You can put some food on them, and they're going to blow up with fruit. But if there's not something out there for them to forage on, you got to keep putting food on them, because they're not going to stop. When you start them, you start your frame rolling, it ain't stopping. Make sure that he feeds. Well, they'll build up really big, starve to death in July. I see a lot of hives of beekeepers that starve in July and August when there's nothing to eat down in West Kentucky. But people don't tend to think about that because it's warm weather. And they see clover blooming, there's nothing in that bloom. It's a clover bloom, the pollen that's there is too desiccated to have any amino acids that the bees can access. I mean, it's like eating cardboard. And there's no nectar. The blooms are there, so why do I have to feed bees? Well, you got to feed bees because there's nothing in the bloom. And it's like saying the plate's on the table, well, there's nothing in it. So, feed them. But that's what the pole line amounts to. It's a bee that's most without tagging, starts early, builds quick. It's something that the guys can use, the commercial guys use, to pollinate off. And that's where it originated. And now it's been bred down even more. And they're good bees. They act more Italian, and they are hygienic. Because they have a big component of Minnesota hygienic genetics. And it's important knowing, you know, what you got. If you get a breeder queen from South Texas that has not been instrumentally inseminated, then don't be surprised if they come looking for you every morning wanting you to come out and play with them. You know, they're not going to be fun to work. And the reason for that is they're probably Africanized, or at least have a significant amount of African genes in them. Know what you get and know what you want. If you want a bee that's going to winter really well on low food stores, Russians and Carniolas, but understand that you're going to have to breed from them for several generations where you live before they're going to start building up quick in the spring. They will eventually get there, but don't expect it to happen real quick. It's about a 5-year process of continual breeding. And the other side of the queen, the other side of the breeding equation from the queen is drones. Drones influence primarily temperament and color. So, queens, that side of the genetic equation is where you're going to get early spring buildup, prolific laying early in the year, hygienic behavior. You're going to get most of that. You'll get some of that from the drone side, but the majority of that comes from the queen side of the genetic equation. But on the other side of that coin, drones have more influence on color and temperament. So you can have a really gentle drone that mates with a really nasty queen, I mean, her bees are really nasty to work. Breed her with gentle drones, and you'll have some pretty decent bees to work. Most of the time, what I find is that the hive that I hate to work the most is also the most productive. And I think that may be because they're working really hard and making a lot of honey, and then when they're not working, they're busy stealing. They're nasty. If you look at a hive that's mean like that and hard to work, you'll notice that a lot of the foragers look bald. You know, they look slick and shiny. But you can tell they don't have paralysis because they're not shaking. Most of the time, if a bee's got paralysis and it's developed paralysis virus, if that virus has developed to the point where the bee has lost all its hair on its abdomen and it's slick and shiny, it'll also be shaking, quivering. But foragers that are flying and there's nothing wrong with them, but they're slick and shiny, that's because they fought their way in and out of a hive, robbing it several times, and got all the hair pulled out. You know, there's a few women in the room here that could be offended by this, but I don't really care. So, all the workers are female. And if you've ever seen two girls in a knockdown, drag-out fight, you know that they pull hair. So, they get their hair pulled out, and they're slick and shiny. And that's mean hives, that's what you'll notice. But don't be afraid to, if you have a mean hive, but it's also really productive, it meets all the other parameters, lives through the winter, starts early, builds quick, but it's mean, make sure it has at least two or three drone yards around it that have really nice gentle drones. And you'll be pleased with the outcome. You know, I did a breeding program study about 4 years ago, and I tried so many outcrosses that I had a thick notebook full of notes that only me and maybe some Egyptian somewhere might could decipher. There's hieroglyphics and all kinds of chicken scratching in it. But the end result of it was that the bees that were just mongrel bees outperformed everything else. Across BSH with Minnesota Hygienic, both ways, queen drone, drone queen, with Russians, three-way crosses, four-way crosses, and some of them were really nice to work, and some of them were really nasty to work. But this is why I say that I'm confident that you can raise as good a queen as you can buy any for. And that's the reason for these meetings, so that you can have somebody that will stand here and tell you, raise your own queens, don't be scared of it, and you don't have to buy expensive breeding stock, but it's okay to buy a breeding stock if you know what you're getting and know where you want to go. You need to kind of make a plan. I know Stu talks about business plans and things all the time. But my plan's not really a business plan. It's just a roadmap. You know, I know that I started here. I know all the inputs that I had. And I know how they turned out. And I make notes about that. You don't have to be some guy with a paperboard talking into it. At every hive, I have a fellow in our beekeeping association that's like that, driving crazy. He'll go to his hive, he'll play this recording back, and I can't half hear it, and bees are buzzing around, and he's saying, I think what I saw then, what I was talking about, well, you know, write it on top of the lid, and then get home and write it in your notebook. And I can read that, I can't hear what you're saying on the tape. But you don't have to be that guy. Just notate what's going on and know what your last action produced. And as long as you have this roadmap showing how you got to where you are, then when things go sideways or you get off in the ditch, you can go back to where it was working and pick up there and go again. Maybe start with a different breeder. And maybe the breeder that you start with is just one out of your own yard. And what I do with our bees, I pick a hive or two or three in every bee yard that I have. And I graft out of every single bee yard that we have, raises its own queen. And I have a cell builder, and I have a queen mother hive that I'm grafting from, which sometimes that's the same hive. I just take the queen out of it, make a loop with her, and let them, you know, graft, put out of that hive, and then take all the open brood, put with the queen, and use that as a cell starter and finisher. Because I'm not looking for a whole bunch of cells. I just want enough cells to split this yard. And most of the time I have about 40 hives in a yard. It's not really that big a deal to get 40 hives out of two cell builders. Even if they're not very efficient, you're going to get that. So every single bee yard we have is like that. And then I'll swap up. I'll take cells from this yard and put them in a mating yard at another location. And the queen yards, they're close enough that they can also serve as a drone yard. So we segregate our bees and designate a certain number of them for honey production, and I leave them alone. Those are the only yards that I don't raise queens out of. Because the more that you're in a hive, the less productive it's going to be. I set them up to make honey, put a bunch of supers on them, and leave them. And go back and make sure that there's bees flying in and out of all of them. And if there's not, I'll fix it. But most of our yards, we raise queens out of each yard. And some of them are more Carniolan, some of them are more Italian. And I had some pure Russian bees about 10, maybe 12 years ago. And I still see evidence of pure Russian genetics. I populated the entire region, I think, with Russian bees in feral population because they swarm when they want to swarm. And I think every hollow tree anywhere around my house has got a Russian colony living in it. And I'm okay with that. I know there's not any way around it other than total deforestation. So, once in a while, I'll get a queen that, a second generation queen, that'll be solid black with a long skinny abdomen, which, I think it was 2003, 2004. That was the Russian breeder, the USDA breeder looked like that. And once in a while, I'll get about a half dozen of them a year. And I know that queen mated with a Russian drone, mostly Russian drone, and I grafted from it, from that particular larva. But the one thing that a trap you might fall into, if you put mating yards in production yards, put your mating nests away from your production hives. Because if those virgin queens have to fly through those foragers, going to and from a breeding area, drone congregation area, those foragers are killed. I've seen that in person. A queen comes out of the hive and flies like this. But a forager comes out of the hive and flies like that. Well, in that area right there, the queen is seen as a usurper. And if she's close to the hive, close to that forager's hive, the guards will kill her. And your return rate is going to go way down. And that's just fact. So put your mating notes. Most of the stuff I tell you because I've made the mistake myself. I mean, I did that. I set up a queen yard for a guy, and that's what happens. So, you know, don't repeat my mistake. set your moves out away from your production hives where they're at the court of the queens aren't having to fly through a big bunch of foragers close to the hives. And you'll have a better rate of return. Don't be disappointed if you have a 50% return. The virgins that come back from mating flight, our average is about 2/3, somewhere around 70%. That's year in, year out. Sometimes it'll be 40%, sometimes it'll be 90%. But our year in, year out average for virgins that return from a mating flight and become a productive queen is about 70%. All of them that fly out of the hive don't come back, usually because of wind. If you've had 2 or 3 days of rainy weather and the next sunny day, your queen's probably going to take off and fly. If the wind's blowing 20 miles an hour, they ain't coming back. Not many of them. Some of them will, but not many. So take all those things into consideration when you're checking your mating nukes, and don't blame it on the queen, or don't, or just blame it on something that everybody else blames it on, the weather. Weather and politicians, those two things you always blame stuff on. Doesn't matter which side. just lump them all in together, politicians. But if you're breeding for color, the drone side is where you're going to get that. If you want bright colored bees, you can get a Carniolan active queen by mating, by grafting from a Carniolan queen or a Russian queen and breeding her with an Italian drone. She'll be a lighter color. She won't look quite like a Carniolan. She'll have yellow stripes and kind of light brown, you know, medium brown and yellow stripes. But she'll look kind of funny, really. But she'll act Carniolan, but be a lighter color. She's a little easier to see. And they make good queens. But the main thing is take good notes and know where you want to go with it. So, how do you guys raise queens? Graft? Non-grafted method, Hopkins, Miller method, just dequeen a hive. When I first started raising queens, I would just take the queen out of the hive and cut the queen cells out that they made. And the little ones, the emergency cells, the little ones, I just trash them, keep the nice big ones. They always make a few big ones. Hey, that works. And it, you have to use, or it's better to use solid wax foundation and not plastic. It's really hard to cut those cells out and get a clean cut on the back side with plastic without damaging that pupa. But I've sat in a lot of queen rearing seminars and kind of felt bad, you know, for some of the people, because I know that some people use the Miller method and that, well, if you don't graft, then you don't know what you get. You don't want emergency cells. Don't just be queen hive. And you got to go through all these steps or you're not going to get a good queen. Well, bees always do it. You know, how'd they get here without our help? So that's what I always fall back on. You know, if you get confused about what's going on, just close the hive and go to the house. You know, drink some tea and set in the shade for the afternoon. They'll figure it out. Way better than what you can do for them. I mean, the worst thing that ever happened to honeybees is we started trying to manage them. We helped them almost to death. But they know how to do this. And one really important principle, not really a principle, it's just a fact. To remember, if you get a queen from an emergency cell, you have a queen that you really like in this one hive. So, you go out there one day, and she is gone. And you pull a frame out, and you notice that bee that's wiggling on the bottom board was that queen that you really liked and we rolled the queen up, and she's dead. Well, 4 days later, there's some emergency cells built in there, and they're capped on about day 5.5, day 6. But they don't look very big, but that's the only shot you got to get the queen out of the one you really like. Even those little bitty peanut cells have the same genetics as that queen that you like. And if she lays a few, if she flies, gets mated, and comes back and lays a few eggs, there you go, graft crisis. Or I'm going to cut them out and make queen cells from them, make virgins with them. The genetics are the same regardless of how long the queen's abdomen is. Or, you know, if you graft from a queen that is that long, which probably not going to, she's going to be about that long. If you graft from a gigantic queen and you get some little bitty old queens like that, they got the same genetics as that big queen did. Graft from them, it was more than likely a food issue. More than likely. And, or possibly a mating issue. And you'll notice that after a virgin comes back from a mating flight, she won't look nothing like she does in 2 weeks. After she starts laying and producing a lot of eggs, her abdomen is going to elongate, she's going to look bigger. So those little bitty peanut looking queens are going to get bigger. But still, they all have the same genetics. So, there's a lot of things that at first glance, when you're raising queens, don't really look that good, that if you give it a little bit of time, it works out. Or if you think about it a little bit longer, you realize that this isn't really that bad. This is the same thing that I had before, and I can grab from her. Now, if she don't lay a good pattern, or if she lays a bunch of drones, a failing queen, or one that's not mated well at all, will lay drone brood on the worker patch. There'll be spots. A patch of drone brood's okay. That indicates messed up comb. But drones, just in single cells in a worker pattern, is a failing queen, or a queen that's not well mated. You better, if you like her genetics or like her mother's genetics, you better graft from her quick or make queens from her quick, because she's not going to last very long. You're going to supersede her pretty quick. As soon as you get some virgins from her, break down the hive and go ahead and paint her, because you want to be in control of these things.